You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
I'm Bertrand Tungandami on NI TV Radio, and I'm in conversation with Dr. Olivia O'Donoghue, a descendant of the Kunjanjara people and the Narunga Nations people. Dr. Olivia O'Donoghue is the first ever Aboriginal censor appointed by the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners. And she's just joined us over the phone to yarn about her new appointment and what that entails for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people wishing to become GPs. First of all, congratulations for your new appointment and welcome to NITV Radio, Dr. O'Donoghue.
Thank you very much, Bertrand. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. When I heard about this appointment, first as a journalist and lay person, a censor for me means censorship. I didn't understand what this entails. Just unpack for us, first of all, what this role entails, what it means.
So a censor for the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners is a very important role in the integrity and the quality of the assessment processes for the college, making sure that policies and procedures are being followed, as well as making sure that there's safe rollout of the RACGP assessments, as well as equitable access to those assessments and making sure that they are delivered of a high quality across the college for all doctors in training becoming GPs. Yeah, so one of my roles as censor, particularly for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander faculty, which is a part of the college and is core business for the college, is to make sure that there's equitable and safe access for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors to enter into general practice training and ensure that they have a smooth transition through training right through to gaining their fellowship to work as unsupervised GPs at the end of training. As you can appreciate, there's probably a lot of barriers for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors even to get into medical degrees at university, and those barriers don't necessarily become any easier once you're looking at entering into postgraduate qualifications as well. So what we do at the college and at the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander faculty level is ensure that people are aware of the opportunities for training and general practice training, and ensure that people have the assistance that need in order to apply to get onto training. Some of the challenges are around the high stakes nature of the assessments of the colleges. So one of my roles is to mentor and support our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GPs in training to navigate those assessments, to successfully complete them, and then they can apply for their fellowship once those high-stakes assessments are done.
What are the challenges facing Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GPs in training?
So it's probably very multifactorial, some of the challenges. Getting to medical schools, not a lot of secondary school students are university ready. So just the challenges of getting into medical school can be around academia, access to education. We're not knowing other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors, and just not knowing that pathways exist to help Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander students become doctors. And because many of our Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors around the country are the first in their family to either go to university, and definitely the first in their family to become doctors. So we don't necessarily have family connections in the health field as well. So often it's about navigating that higher education pathway for the first time. And then once you do become a doctor, you're working early for the first few years within tertiary hospital systems around the country with opportunities to go rural and remote quite a few times. But also just navigating the job, the system, the barriers within the system and how busy that is as well. It can be quite challenging. And the holistic way that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors like to practice medicine is often not compatible or in congruence with the way that health services are rolled out, especially in the big tertiary institutions. So sometimes there's a lot of conflict internal and within the system itself that needs to be managed and reconciled and be able to move forward in that space. before that you then think about getting onto general practice training. And some of those barriers still exist within that training environment. Because we think quite holistically, our families play a lot of the role in helping to support us through training. Many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors come through postgraduate entry programs. So I've already had another career, another job before even entering this pathway into medicine and training to be GPs. And sometimes that's a bit of a challenge as well. And being able to have that cultural support, social support, holistic approach to one's well-being through rigorous training programs is really, really important and sometimes challenging to achieve, especially when there are time frame demands and pressures to get through training.
But this is something that you've navigated. Can you tell us, as an Aboriginal woman, how you've succeeded in this field, your pathway into becoming a GP and growing up to this very high level in your profession?
I've been really, really fortunate in my time. I just like to say that every single Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctor who chooses to embark on a career in medicine has their own experience and their own lived experience. And we do come from a huge variety of areas across the country, and we all have our own individual ways in which we've been supported and coped through this journey. So I often, when I get asked this question, reflect on the things that have really helped. Throughout medical school, I had a very close group of like-minded friends who mostly came from rural and remote areas of Australia. And I found strength in those friendships, because finding people who are equally as passionate about the things that you are is a really good start. And they become great advocates for you as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person trying to navigate the trials and tribulations of medical school. I also had quite a supportive family, just in terms of the social and emotional support that they gave to me, not necessarily an education background or a financially secure background, but just the love and support to do that. My sister was also navigating university as a dental student as well at the same time. So we probably helped each other a lot in terms of navigating university lifestyle, even though we were doing fairly different courses. Once I became a doctor, I went home to Alice Springs. Being home, working in the hospital, and just having strength of knowing the people around, knowing the community, knowing how things work, feeling connected to that land and that space really helped to cope with the high pressures of being an intern and a junior doctor within the hospital system. In terms of general practice training, I didn't always know that I was going into that space. I dabbled with the idea of doing pediatric training or doing obstetric training, but my heart always came back to wanting to work rural, do some remote work, work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples and populations. And I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to do many placements to Northeast Arnhem Land, where I found out a lot about culture and community and kinship, things that I felt that I needed to learn a lot more about, having grown up in Alice Springs away from my country and not having those strong connections with my actual family communities. I just found that a really rewarding experience and a real time of growth for me. And I had supervisors who were looking after me and helping me to learn and grow as a junior doctor and then as a GP trainee, who were really strong advocates for what I needed as a woman working in Aboriginal communities trying to navigate training. So I pay a lot of respect and thanks to those people who know who they are, who helped me along the way and sat with me talking about cases and patients and cultural concerns and, yeah, role-playing lots of different scenarios with me to make sure that I was thinking broadly and holistically about the care in my community. So, and the communities I was working with just taught me a lot about being humble and taking my time to build relationships and getting to know people. And they're the things that really attract me to general practice and working in rural and remote communities.
This appointment falls at a time when the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners is also celebrating its 10 years of after launching the Aboriginal faculty. And also, it's a way of marking their action to close the gap between Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health outcomes. Your appointment, does it entail you to stay where you're currently working, or you'll have to move into a more urban area? And if you move, how will you address the gap that exists?
So I'm currently living and working in Darwin, having spent a lot of time in rural and remote Northern Territory and working particularly in Aboriginal community-controlled health services. I did come back to Darwin because I developed a passion for education, sort of trying to ensure that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GPs in training in the Northern Territory have a really quality and comprehensive cultural education experience so that they can better provide services for communities across the Northern Territory. Part of the getting involved with the RACGP so much kind of stemmed from that education role that I was playing with the Northern Territory General Practice Training Organisation, where I'd work with a team of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander cultural educators and another Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GP to help educate and train up-and-coming GPs and supervisors of GPs in training to deliver more culturally appropriate and safe health services and be able to openly and candidly discuss with them the barriers affecting Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, particularly in the Northern Territory, but across Australia, to accessing healthcare that's appropriate and safe for them that can change health outcomes. That's part of what I've been passionate about, and that's why I'm based mostly in Darwin at the moment, sort of working on those strategies. From building up that confidence and experience as an educator, I've also been involved a lot with medical education itself and have been really wanting to get involved with high quality education that suits trainees as well. So part of that led me to wanting to learn more about the assessments and the assessment processes, the exams, the clinical assessments, and what makes them work and tick and what makes them fair for and safe to be delivered to trainees, and in particular Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander trainees. So increasing the number of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GPs is definitely one of the biggest things that I would like to work with the RACGP on. We currently have approximately 60 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander fellows of the RACGP and just as many who are currently in training. So this number has really increased over the last few years. And it's really exciting to see that we've got so many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors in training. We really need to make sure that we get them towards fellowship and get their GP ticket and out there in the community. Because even though we have 60 now, we really need a lot more to even think about reaching workforce parity amongst general practitioners across Australia. I think the last figure was approximately about 700 to meet the 3% of their GP workforce population.
Well, there's a way.
So we've got some way to go.
Long way to go. So that's a huge challenge for you. On that note, any final word for our listeners?
We do have a lot of people who are really passionate about closing that gap in workforce equity for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander GPs. The RACGP being one of them. The other General Practice College, the Australian College of Rural and Remote Medicine, is also passionate about that. The government is really, and the Department of Health is really passionate about closing those statistics as well. And I do some advocacy and medical education work with a national peer support network called the Indigenous GP Registrar Network as well, which supports culturally and academically at GPs in training from both the RACGP and ACRM or country. So we will get there. We just have a long way to go. And I think all the right players are on the same page about wanting to make sure that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander doctors have equitable access to general practice training in Australia.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.